Chapter 117. Illustrative, like the preceding one, of the old proverb, that adversity brings a man acquainted with strange bedfellows, likewise containing Mr. Pickwick's extraordinary and startling announcement to Mr. Samuel Weller. When Mr. Pickwick opened his eyes next morning, the first object upon which they rested was Samuel Weller, seated upon a small black portmanteau, intently regarding, apparently in a condition of profound abstraction, the stately figure of the dashing Mr. Smangle, while Mr. Smangle himself, who was already partially dressed, was seated on his bedstead, occupied in the desperately hopeless attempt of staring Mr. Weller out of countenance. We say desperately hopeless, because Sam, with a comprehensive gaze which took in Mr. Smangle's cap, feet, head, face, legs, and whiskers, all at the same time, continued to look steadily on, with every demonstration of lively satisfaction, but with no more regard to Mr. Smangle's personal sentiments on the subject than he would have displayed had he been inspecting a wooden statue, or a straw emboweled Guy Fawkes. "Well, will you know me again?" apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Smangle, with a frown. "I'd sphere to you any veers, sir," apostrophe replied Sam cheerfully. "Don't be impertinent to a gentleman, sir," apostrophe said Mr. Smangle. "Not on no account," apostrophe replied Sam. "If he will tell me when he wakes, I'll be upon the worry best extra super behavior." Apostrophe apostrophe this observation, having a remote tendency to imply that Mr. Smangle was no gentleman, kindled his ire. "Mivins," apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Smangle, with a passionate air. "What's the office?" apostrophe apostrophe replied that gentleman from his couch. "Who the devil is this fellow?" apostrophe apostrophe gad apostrophe said Mr. Mivins, looking lazily out from under the bedclothes. "I ought to ask you that. Hasn't he any business here?" apostrophe no apostrophe replied Mr. Smangle. "Then knock him downstairs, and tell him not to presume to get up till I come and kick him," apostrophe rejoined Mr. Mivins. With this prompt advice, that excellent gentleman again betook himself to slumber. The conversation exhibiting these unequivocal symptoms of verging on the personal, Mr. Pickwick deemed it a fit point at which to interpose. "Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Sir," apostrophe rejoined that gentleman. "Has anything new occurred since last night?" apostrophe apostrophe no in particular, sir," apostrophe replied Sam, glancing at Mr. Smangle's whiskers. "The late prevalence of a close and confined atmosphere has been rather favorable to the growth of weeds, of an alarmin' and sanguinary matter, but with that ear exception things is quiet enough." Apostrophe, "I shall get up," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Give me some clean things." Apostrophe, whatever hostile intentions Mr. Smangle might have entertained, his thoughts were speedily diverted by the unpacking of the portmanteau, the contents of which appeared to impress him at once with a most favorable opinion, not only of Mr. Pickwick, but of Sam also, who, he took an early opportunity of declaring in a tone of voice loud enough for that eccentric personage to overhear, was a regular thoroughbred original, and consequently the very man after his own heart. As to Mr. Pickwick, the affection he conceived for him knew no limits. "Now is there anything I can do for you, my dear sir?" apostrophe apostrophe said Smangle. "Nothing that I am aware of, I am obliged to you," apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick. "No linen that you want sent to the washerwoman's? I know a delightful washerwoman outside, that comes for my things twice a week, and, by Jove, how devilish lucky. This is the day she calls. Shall I put any of those little things up with mine?" "Don't say anything about the trouble. Confound and curse it. If one gentleman under a cloud is not to put himself a little out of the way, to assist another gentleman in the same condition, what's human nature?" apostrophe apostrophe. Thus spake Mr. Smangle, edging himself meanwhile as near as possible to the portmanteau, and beaming forth looks of the most fervent and disinterested friendship. There's nothing you want to give out for the man to brush, my dear creature, is there? Apostrophe apostrophe, resumed Smangle. No then whatever, my fine feller, apostrophe, rejoined Sam, taking the reply into his own mouth. Perhaps if one of us was to brush, without troubling the man, it 'ud be more agreeable for all parties, as the schoolmaster said, when the young gentleman objected to being flogged by the butler. Apostrophe, and there's nothing I can send in my little box to the washerwoman's, is there? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Smangle, turning from Sam to Mr. Pickwick, with an air of some discomfiture. No then whatever, sir, apostrophe, retorted Sam. I'm afeard the little box must be chock full o' your own as it is. Apostrophe, this speech was accompanied with such a very expressive look at that particular portion of Mr. Smangle's attire, by the appearance of which the skill of laundresses in getting up gentlemen's linen is generally tested, that he was fain to turn upon his heel, and, for the present at any rate, to give up all design on Mr. Pickwick's purse and wardrobe. He accordingly retired in dudgeon into the racket ground, where he made a light and wholesome breakfast on a couple of the cigars which had been purchased on the previous night. Mr. Mivins, who was no smoker, and whose account for small articles of chandlery had also reached down to the bottom of the slate, and been carried over to the other side, remained in bed, and, in his own words, took it out in sleep. Apostrophe, after breakfasting in a small closet attached to the coffee room, which bore the imposing title of the snuggery, the temporary inmate of which, in consideration of a small additional charge, had the unspeakable advantage of overhearing all the conversation in the coffee room aforesaid. And, after dispatching Mr. Weller on some necessary errands, Mr. Pickwick repaired to the lodge, to consult Mr. Roker concerning his future accommodation. Accommodation, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, said that gentleman, consulting a large book. Plenty of that, Mr. Pickwick. Your chummage ticket will be on 27, in the third. Apostrophe, oh, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. My what, did you say? Apostrophe, your chummage ticket, apostrophe, replied Mr. Roker. You're up to that? Apostrophe apostrophe, not quite, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick, with a smile. Why, apostrophe, said Mr. Roker, it's as plain as Salisbury. You'll have a chummage ticket upon 27 in the third, and the masses in the room will be your chums. Apostrophe, are there many of them? Apostrophe apostrophe, inquired Mr. Pickwick dubiously. Three, apostrophe, replied Mr. Roker. Mr. Pickwick coughed. One of them's a parson, apostrophe, said Mr. Roker, filling up a little piece of paper as he spoke. Another's a butcher. Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Pickwick. A butcher, apostrophe, repeated Mr. Roker, giving the nib of his pen a tap on the desk, to cure it of a disinclination to mark. What a thorough paced goer he used to be sure lie. You remember Tom Martin, Nettie? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Roker, appealing to another man in the lodge, who was paring the mud off his shoes with a 5-and-20 bladed pocket knife. I should think so, apostrophe, replied the party addressed, with a strong emphasis on the personal pronoun. Bless my dear eyes. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Roker, shaking his head slowly from side to side, and gazing abstractedly out of the grated windows before him, as if he were fondly recalling some peaceful scene of his early youth. It seems but yesterday that he whopped the coal heaver down Fox under the hill by the wharf there. I think I can see him now, a coming up the strand between the two street keepers, a little sobered by the bruising, with a patch o' vinegar and brown paper over his right eyelid, and that ear lovely bulldog, as pinned the little boy arterwards, a following at his heels. What a rum thing time is, ain't it, Nettie? apostrophe, the gentleman to whom these observations were addressed, who appeared of a taciturn and thoughtful cast, merely echoed the inquiry. Mr. Roker, shaking off the poetical and gloomy train of thought into which he had been betrayed, descended to the common business of life, and resumed his pen. Do you know what the third gentleman is? ? Inquired Mr. Pickwick, not very much gratified by this description of his future associates. What is that, Simpson, Nettie? ? Said Mr. Roker, turning to his companion. What, Simpson? ? Said Nettie. Why, him in 27 in the third, that this gentleman's going to be chummed on. ? ? Replied Nettie, he's nothing exactly. He was a horse chaunter. He's a leg now. ? Rejoined Mr. Roker, closing the book, and placing the small piece of paper in Mr. Pickwick's hands. That's the ticket, sir. ? Very much perplexed by the summary disposition of this person, Mr. Pickwick walked back into the prison, revolving in his mind what he had better do. Convinced, however, that before he took any other steps it would be advisable to see, and hold personal converse with, the three gentlemen with whom it was proposed to quarter him, he made the best of his way to the third flight. After groping about in the gallery for some time, attempting in the dim light to decipher the numbers on the different doors, he at length appealed to a potboy, who happened to be pursuing his morning occupation of gleaning for pewter. Which is 27, my good fellow? ? Said Mr. Pickwick. Five doors farther on, replied the potboy. There's the likeness of a man being hung, and smoking the while, chalked outside the door. Guided by this direction, Mr. Pickwick proceeded slowly along the gallery until he encountered the portrait of a gentleman, above described, upon whose countenance he tapped, with the knuckle of his forefinger gently at first, and then audibly. After repeating this process several times without effect, he ventured to open the door and peep in. There was only one man in the room, and he was leaning out of window as far as he could without overbalancing himself, endeavoring, with great perseverance, to spit upon the crown of the hat of a personal friend on the parade below. As neither speaking, coughing, sneezing, knocking, nor any other ordinary mode of attracting attention made this person aware of the presence of a visitor, Mr. Pickwick, after some delay, stepped up to the window, and pulled him gently by the coattail. The individual brought in his head and shoulders with great swiftness, and surveying Mr. Pickwick from head to foot, demanded in a surly tone, what the something beginning with a capital H he wanted. I believe, said Mr. Pickwick, consulting his ticket, I believe this is 27 in the third? Well? Replied the gentleman. I have come here in consequence of receiving this bit of paper, rejoined Mr. Pickwick. Hand it over, said the gentleman. Mr. Pickwick complied. I think Roker might have chummed you somewhere else, said Mr. Simpson, for it was the leg, after a very discontented sort of a pause. Mr. Pickwick thought so also, but, under all the circumstances, he considered it a matter of sound policy to be silent. Mr. Simpson mused for a few moments after this, and then, thrusting his head out of the window, gave a shrill whistle, and pronounced some word aloud, several times. What the word was, Mr. Pickwick could not distinguish, but he rather inferred that it must be some nickname which distinguished Mr. Martin, from the fact of a great number of gentlemen on the ground below, immediately proceeding to cry butcher. In imitation of the tone in which that useful class of society are wont, diurnally, to make their presence known at area railings. Subsequent occurrences confirmed the accuracy of Mr. Pickwick's impression, for, in a few seconds, a gentleman, prematurely brought for his ears, clothed in a professional blue jean frock and top boots with circular toes, entered the room nearly out of breath, closely followed by another gentleman in very shabby black and a sealskin cap. The latter gentleman, who fastened his coat all the way up to his chin by means of a pin and a button alternately, had a very coarse red face, and looked like a drunken chaplain, which, indeed, he was. These two gentlemen having by turns perused Mr. Pickwick's billet, the one expressed his opinion that it was a rig, apostrophe, and the other his conviction that it was a go. Apostrophe having recorded their feelings in these very intelligible terms, they looked at Mr. Pickwick and each other in awkward silence. "It's an aggravating thing, just as we got the bed so snug," apostrophe said the chaplain, looking at three dirty mattresses, each rolled up in a blanket, which occupied one corner of the room during the day, and formed a kind of slab, on which were placed an old cracked basin, ewer, and soap dish, of common yellow earthenware, with a blue flower very aggravating. Apostrophe, Mr. Martin expressed the same opinion in rather stronger terms. Mr. Simpson, after having let a variety of expletive adjectives loose upon society without any substantive to accompany them, tucked up his sleeves, and began to wash the greens for dinner. While this was going on, Mr. Pickwick had been eyeing the room, which was filthily dirty, and smelt intolerably close. There was no vestige of either carpet, curtain, or blind. There was not even a closet in it. Unquestionably there were but few things to put away, if there had been one, but, however few in number, or Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.